Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. Football season is officially underway. We had our first full weekend, NFL and college. We'll do the NFL podcast tomorrow. But I want to also introduce Travis Rockhold, our new producer. Finally, this rotation has been a fun punchline. All the different producers, but we're going to have some steady voice here, Travis. How are you?
Barring a catastrophe, I'll be back every week as your producer.
All right, but you have to go 75% with your picks. Is that okay?
I'll just pick Ohio State every time.
Okay. Oh, yes, we got a Buckeye in the house. How do you feel about your chances this year? You got your new quarterback?
I feel good. Justin Fields, after playing Cincinnati, was the real game I wanted to see. The first week was a weird game. Could he, you know, perform? It seems like that. Indiana, Big Ten game this week. How will we do? But he's got to stay healthy. That's the biggest thing. He goes down, like most teams, that if you lose your starting quarterback, you're done.
But you're encouraged. You're excited.
I love this offense.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard not to. So fun podcast coming up, Travis. We got John Murray, like we usually do at the end. He's going to give us some of the sharp plays, have some fun, have a few laughs about kicking is for losers. And then we're going to have a debut here in the pod. Paul Stone, professional bettor. He's won a lot of college football contests. A lot, meaning a few. You know what I mean? And a guy I've known for a while, so we're going to get a new voice and just got a lot of opinions. And we're going to flush out some picks here, and then my official picks will be on ESPN.com's chalk section. I got to submit those this afternoon, and they'll go up Thursday morning, and then we obviously have the NFL plays. I did okay in the NFL, too, 3-1 last weekend and on the chalk page, but I laid an egg over the weekend on UCLA and the Browns, so I was bad on the TV show. So we'll have to turn that around. And just excited. I mean, I know the card's not that great, but why not?
The card may not be great on paper, but for a better, this might be the week that you can actually take advantage of some things.
I would agree. See, folks, he's a seasoned veteran.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Time now to welcome in Paul Stone, longtime better and professional handicapper and better, lives in Texas and guy I've known for a while, making his Behind the Bets debut. Paul, how are you, my man?
Doing well, Doug. Appreciate you guys having me, and it's another exciting week of college football.
Not everyone would think that, but in the betting world, it's always exciting. So I agree with you that there's always an opportunity. We joke on Daily Wager that we have a segment called All Tickets Cash the Same. So no matter if it's high profile or low profile, they cash the same. So we're going to try to find some good opportunities here. And you know, I talked about UCLA last week on the pod, so I need to get a new voice. We needed to mix it up a little bit because I'm off the Bruins. And before we get into specific games, I want to talk about teams we're buying and selling. And usually it's buy low, sell high. But I'm selling the Bruins, and I'm selling them low because I keep thinking Chip Kelly is going to turn things around because I have such faith in him. And I saw flashes, especially the opening night. I thought the team played really well. Should have covered. The scoop and score was there, but the ref blew the whistle. Whatever. I thought the defense played okay. But the offense just looks inept. And at some point, I need to stop throwing good money on bad teams. And I'm done with DTR until he shows me otherwise. So I don't really have an opinion on this Oklahoma game. I would lean to the Sooners, but I don't trust their defense. But I think they can. I think UCLA offense has just been that bad. But in general, I'm off the Bruins bandwagon. I'm off. So I'm selling them right now. Any thoughts on that?
You know, I was in the preseason. I actually wrote a article for a publication, and one of the teams that I recommended playing on was UCLA. So I certainly stand corrected. One of the things we have to do, I believe, Doug, and be willing to do, is move off positions. And I'm with you on UCLA. After just two games, I'm selling the Bruins as well. Their offense, again, you mentioned Dorian Thompson Robinson. He doesn't really seem to have made many strides. They just don't have many weapons offensively. Chip Kelly's not recruited really well at UCLA yet. I think there are a lot of trends pointing downward. They've got Oklahoma this week. They go to Pullman next week to play Washington State, then to Arizona. I don't know. I think it's going to be a long season for the Bruins, and I certainly agree with you on selling UCLA.
That doesn't mean we can't jump back on. If they start to show growth like they did last year, maybe I might have to get back with my ex there. Any team you're selling?
You know, really two teams, and I'll go over both of those. They actually played in a bowl game last year. But we've got two teams right now ranked currently in the Associated Press's top 10, Florida and Michigan. And frankly, I don't think either of them belong there. You know, you look at Florida. I've repeatedly asserted that Florida's starting place this season was exaggerated, largely due to last year's 41-15 Peach Bowl victory over what I would call a disinterested, uninspired Michigan team to finish 2018. You look at the Gators this year, they have a rebuild offensive line, only one starter, 24 career starts, return off last year's 10-3 teams. They won't match last year's offensive norms of 35 points, 213 rushing yards. They're not going to get there either, nor will they be plus 12 in the turnover category, nor will they only allow 18 sacks, and nor will they win three games as a betting underdog. And on top of those factors, I think Felipe Franks still, in my mind, he doesn't inspire confidence in the big games. So I'm selling Florida. I'm not nearly as high on Florida as some people. Then we look at Michigan. That's another team that I'm really down on a little bit. You know, some respected observers, people that I really follow and respect, they came into 2019 really bullish on Michigan. I really didn't see it, though. You know, in fact, I bought a ticket this summer at minus 270, Michigan not making the 14 playoff. I feel like it's virtually stealing. You know, I just don't think the Wolverines, after having, you know, seen their first two games of the season, they really haven't done anything to change my opinion. You look at them, you know, from a personnel standpoint, they lost so much on defense, and that was a great Michigan defense last year. But they lose two players, Rashawn Gary and Devin Bush Jr., who were picked in the first 12 selections of the NFL draft. They lose two more players off that great defense who were picked in the third round. So those are four big-time players, you know, right there off that defense. Then you look at Shea Patterson. You know, he really, in my mind, hasn't measured up to expectations since transferring from Mississippi. He's got some ball management, you know, issues, taking care of the ball. Wolverines, obviously, off this week. They travel to Camp Randall next week to play Wisconsin. I think they're in trouble against the Badgers. I'll be really interested to see what that line opens at. I'm buying, the Wolverines, and I'm certainly selling them now. So I'm not high on either Florida or Michigan, both top 10 teams right now in the AP poll.
Yeah, I'm with you there. But so you mentioned Michigan off this week with a bye week there at Camp Randall, as you said. But Florida laying the 8 at Kentucky. When you say you're selling, are you selling them then here? Like, are you taking the Wildcats?
Well, I played, as you're aware, in late May, CG Technology and the Golden Nugget released a number of games of the year. One of the games that I bet was Florida minus 6.5 over Kentucky. So I'm going to hold on to that ticket. You know, Kentucky lost their quarterback, Terry Wilson, last weekend for the season. In steps, Sawyer Smith, who played and started some games at Troy. But I'm a little bit down on Kentucky as well. So I think Florida's going to get redemption for last year's game. And I still kind of like Florida in this individual spot. But as a whole, for the remainder of the season, I'm going to be looking for opportunities to fade the Gators.
Interesting. So you like them in that spot just because it's a revenge situation, and Kentucky's not nearly as good as they were last year. I can get behind that. You mentioned Felipe Franks doesn't instill confidence. Yeah, I think he's just a little off. Like, there's just something off with his game. Curious as to teams you're buying. I'm going to start with Maryland. Now, typically when you say teams that you're buying, it's like, oh, a team that's 0-2, maybe 1-1, that you're going to buy low. Well, they're 2-0 and 2-0 ATS, but I still don't think they're getting the respect necessarily, because the first game was a beatdown over a bad opponent. Week two was Syracuse, but everyone kind of dismissed the margin of victory because, oh, it's Syracuse's look-ahead spot because they got Clemson this week. Not so fast. I think this area, just the recruiting area, has a lot of athletes, and they can kind of own that, and I think they're starting to get there. They've also battled a lot of injuries at the quarterback. Last year they were, like, relegated to, I think, a third stringer for a lot. So I think finally they're healthy QB, and Locksley coming over from Alabama, former OC, now the head coach. I think he's making a difference. Look at what this offense has done. I mean, let's just say 63 is an anomaly there against Syracuse, but they're still a high-powered offense. So I think there's still, like, value, if you will, on Maryland.
You know, I certainly agree to a degree. One thing, you know, through two games, we start making – some determinations and opinions about teams. In Maryland, opening with the huge victory, I believe, over Howard, and then winning last week at home over Syracuse. I'll say Syracuse is one of my most overrated teams coming into the year. So I certainly was impressed with the Terrapins against Syracuse. I probably don't give them quite as many bonus points for that victory. But Maryland is talented. Anthony McFarland, he gained over 200 yards last year in two games. One of them was against Ohio State at home in a game they almost won. I think the other was against Indiana. A lot of people might not know his name, but that's a big-time playmaker. He's one of the best running backs in all of college football. Joshua Jackson, the former Virginia Tech quarterback who's a grad transfer there at Maryland, I was really impressed with his throwing against Syracuse on Saturday. So I certainly am more with you than against you on Maryland. I'm kind of taking a wait-and-see position on them. They're playing their first road game of the year this Saturday at Temple. Then they have a game after a bye week at home against Penn State, which will tell a lot, obviously, about that Maryland team. But I'm excited about Maryland. I know a lot of people came into the season really down on Mike Locksley. But so far through two games, he's passed both tests with flying colors. Be interesting to see what they do this week on the road at Temple, and then 2 weeks from now at home against Penn State.
Yeah, laying 7 at Temple, and I really think they can beat one of those two big teams on their home field, whether it be Penn State or Michigan. Now, Michigan's not till November, but those are the two big opponents. Now they got some road games at Purdue and Minnesota and Indiana at home, which will be tough for, by their standards. But team you're buying that's maybe flying under the radar?
I'm going to buy a team. I'm going to go up into the Pacific Northwest in Pullman, Washington, looking at Washington State. First of all, Utah rightfully got a lot of the preseason Pac-12 love, and I think that's justified. The Mike Leach's Washington State team just might be flying under the radar a little bit once again. Their first two games, a 50-something and 40-something victory over New Mexico State and Northern Colorado, certainly doesn't tell us much about the Cougars. We'll start getting more clarity, I believe, this week when they face University of Houston, NRG Stadium in Houston. Leach, he's just a quarterback whisperer. Once again, I think he's found a one-year wonder quarterback, so to speak, and senior Anthony Gordon, who really hadn't even played before this year. Gordon's played almost flawlessly in his first two games against lesser competition. Looking at the past 3 years and kind of where Washington State is coming from into this season, over the past three seasons, looking at Pac-12 play, nobody's probably surprised that Washington has the best record in conference at 22-5. But who's got the second best record in the Pac-12 during that span? If you said Washington State, you're correct. The Cougars 20-7 straight up the last 3 years in league play. They've also outperformed the line makers' expectations in recent times. They've gone 17-6 against the spread in their last 23 regular season games against FBS opposition. I think, once again, Washington State's undervalued. People kind of look at Mike Leach as kind of a goofball up there in the on the Palouse, just kind of doing his thing. But I'm buying the Cougars once again. I think they're going to make some noise there in the Pac-12.
I love Leach as a coach, as a person, all that fun stuff. I had their season win total under just because I thought the schedule was just absolutely brutal. It was nothing against him, but we'll see. And it's funny you say that because I want to get into picks for this particular weekend because I'm actually in a game that's involving Mike Leach and Wazoo. And I don't trust Houston's defense, but I trust their offense. And I think we're poised for a shootout, but I trust Houston to get points. And I'm going to go with I'm looking at their team total, and I believe it's over 33. So I think Houston can cover the 33 points on their own, the cover meaning go over the team total.
Yeah, one thing I look at certainly when I'm looking at team totals or, game totals for both teams is how fast are these teams going to play? What is their pace? How many plays will they average a game? Houston, certainly under previous coaching regimes, a very fast-paced, up-tempo team. They averaged 79 plays per game last year. I don't think they're going to slow down at all under first-year head coach Dana Holgorsen. The one thing that concerns me a little bit about that team total would be that Washington State, in my opinion, is going to have the best defense that Houston will face this year. Last year, in three games, Houston did score 31 points or fewer. So I'm a little bit concerned from that angle, but I'm certainly not playing Houston under that team total of 33. So I'll be pulling for you there for the Cougars, the Houston Cougars in this case, to go over their team total.
So you think Wazoo's D is actually respectable to a certain extent?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they're, looking at the numbers here, if you look at what they've averaged giving up, you know, they're an above average. You know, I'd say they're probably a top 30 type defense there, and they've got some folks back. But, I like their defense. Last year they gave up only 23.3 points per game, 358 yards per game total defense. Both would certainly probably rank in the top, 30 or 40 in all of college football. Got six starters back, got some good people up front. I think they've got an above-average Power 5 conference defense there.
Interesting. Okay. What's a game you like?
You know, one of the games starting out will be a game Friday night, which is really a scheduling oddity. You've got two teams in the same conference, the ACC, separated by approximately 75 miles. They're playing a non-conference game, as I said, on a Friday night. And, of course, I'm talking about North Carolina and Wake Forest. And both these teams do enter with, perfect 2-0 marks. Certainly, North Carolina's start has merited more attention nationally under Mack Brown, who returns to Chapel Hill, where he coached previously from 1988 to 1997, after six seasons away from the sideline after resigning there at the University of Texas. You look at the Tar Heels, and oddly enough, they'll be a betting underdog for the third straight week. They beat South Carolina 24-20 in their opener. On a neutral side is Charlotte, as an 11-point underdog. Last week, they defeated Miami, Florida, as a home underdog of 5 points, beat the Hurricanes 28-25. North Carolina really been impressive with true freshman quarterback Sam Howell. They will, however, be playing their first true road game of the 2019 season. So going to the road for the first time, currently the Tar Heels, a 3-point underdog there at Wake Forest. I looked at the database. Although not overwhelming, college teams that won their previous two games as an underdog and are now an underdog again on the road, just 10-16 against the spread the last 10 years. Got a sample size there of 26 games, 62%, not bad. Looking at Wake Forest, you got quarterback Jamie Newman, a true dual threat guy, almost 800 yards of total offense in their first two games, six touchdown passes this year, no interceptions. I'm taking Wake Forest and laying the 3 points there in Winston-Salem.
Two things concerning about Wake, and I sure as hell wouldn't take North Carolina, so I'm with you to a certain extent, but Wake's defense, awful, and I just hate some of the play calling in the goal-to-goal situations. They have this huge quarterback in Newman, and they don't run the ball. It's just laughable at times. It's kind of been frustrating just because I've been involved in their games the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, that Utah State game, I think you're probably pointing to that a little bit. That was a little bit of a head-scratcher on some of the play calling there by the goal line. A lot of teams, though, goal line offense and play calling in today's college football is a little bit quirky, but I just like the spot for Wake Forest. Like the fact that North Carolina coming off two victories as an underdog and now an underdog again. So it's more of a spot in a situation that puts me in the corner of Wake Forest in this particular game.
No, and that's the operative word in all this stuff, you know. We talk about, like in this case, this particular week, and Texas would have a flat spot laying 32 to Rice on a neutral at Reliance Stadium. It's just these teams that have national championship aspirations that lose. Like, what happens the next week, especially if they're heavily favored? It's all about handicapping the spot. Now, speaking of which, Penn State first half. I'm not huge on the Nittany Lions. I know last week FPI favored them to win the Big Ten East over Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State. Now, that's a little much after just beating Idaho. I think they're good. They're not going to be great. And there'll be spots to fade them. But I think this spot, the first half, Penn State, just given how poorly they came out against Buffalo, they were trailing at halftime, were outgained nearly 200 yards in the first half. I think you get their best effort. And they have an explosive offense. And I like Pitt. And I think Whipple's doing a better job with the offense. But I think it's a good spot for Penn State in the first half.
You know, Doug, you kind of hit on all the points I would make about that game. You know, Penn State sleptwalked through the first half last week against Buffalo, trailed Buffalo 10-7 at the half. You mentioned the statistical domination. Buffalo had the ball for 21.5 minutes of the first half's 30 minutes, so just total domination. Penn State then comes out of the second half, takes control of the game, and wins decisively. But I think that certainly affects how they'll start – against a true rival in Pitt. I'm sure the coaches have really harped on the slow start last week. Got to come out of the gate more quickly. I think you'll get Penn State's best effort. I'm assuming this game's going to be, hopefully, from your perspective, a shade under 10 for the first half. I haven't seen first half numbers yet, but 10 or a little bit under for the first half. I certainity can get on board with you taking the Nittany Lions in that position.
More with Paul in a moment, but first I want to tell you about male pattern baldness. 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of it by the time they're 35. The good news, with today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss. Keeps has revolutionized the way men are treated for hair loss. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get medication delivered to your home. Prevention is key. Keeps treatments really work. They are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. So act fast. Many men even experience hair regrowth with Keeps treatments. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatments start at just $10 per month, plus for a limited time, you can get your first month free. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/bets to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/bets. All right, back with Paul here. Paul, you got another winner for us?
Another play I like is going to be Oklahoma State at Tulsa. Again, you've got two schools in close proximity. These schools separated by about 70 miles. Typically, these kind of games where you've got a team from a smaller conference, in this case Tulsa from the American Athletic Conference, playing a team from a more high-profile conference, Oklahoma State from the Big 12, typically I would be looking to, you know, to support the team from the smaller conference. But this game really has meant a lot to Oklahoma State, or at least they performed well against Tulsa in recent times. They played 3 times in the past 10 seasons, twice in Stillwater and once there in Tulsa. Oklahoma State in those games was favored by 17, 13.5, and 7 points. They won all 3 of those games by 26 or more points, an average of almost 33 points per game in those 3 games. Looking at the trajectory of the Tulsa program, I think it's certainly trending downward under fifth-year head coach Philip Montgomery, who was a former Baylor offensive assistant under Art Briles there. Golden Hurricane only a combined 5-19 straight up the past 2 seasons in 2017 and 18, hadn't won a whole lot of football games. Oklahoma State's got another great football team. You know, Mike Gundy, in my opinion, is one of those coaches who does more with less. You know, they typically outperform the expectations of the preseason prognosticators, and I think it'll be a case of that again this year. They've got a great trifecta of skilled players. Redshirt freshman quarterback Spencer Sanders is a true dual threat guy. He can run the football, he can throw the football. Got a great tailback in Chuba Hubbard. I've got a big time receiver in Tillon Wallace. I just like this Oklahoma State team. Only laying 14. I think they're going to cover that number, take Oklahoma State over Tulsa.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's a strong play. And that's definitely a game I would not bet the first half. I think that's just a – you want to lengthen the sample size as much as you can, play 4 quarters instead of 2, because I think just they overwhelm them. I mean, Tulsa's got some competent players at times. They're 2-0 ATS. They haven't played anyone, obviously, to the talent level of Okie State. Excuse me. Yeah, Okie State. But I would definitely go for the full game on that one. Now – Bama first half, this is something we know about from last year, 10-0 to start the year, ATS. And I like it because it's in that kind of dead zone, 24.5, 25 right now with South Carolina on the road in Columbia. And for me, South Carolina's looked good with the new quarterback, but this is a much different ask. I don't think they're going to score more than 3 points in the first half. And I'm gonna look to grab that Bama first half number when it comes out. Now, South Carolina does have a couple good corners, which is essential to keeping Bama under 50, but I mean that's in a game, but that's not what we're trying to do. I mean, you're looking at like probably a 16.5 point spread in the first half, something like that. And I'm looking to lay that with Bama. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the quarterback Ryan Helinski, the freshman, looked good against Charleston Southern last week, but that was Charleston Southern, and this is Alabama, and I think this would be obviously a more true measure of where he is at this point in his development as a young quarterback. And Alabama's a tough nut to crack, even if you're playing there at home in Williams-Brice. I'm certainly not going to this has been a recent trend where Alabama in the first half has really performed well. I'm certainly not one to, you know, jump in front of the runaway train, so to speak. I don't know that I'll be on it because it is going to be a pretty big number. And, you know, I'm still kind of waiting and seeing exactly how good Alabama is. I do have them power ranked number one. So, obviously, I think they're quite good. But these are big numbers. And, you know, I would only play Alabama. It would be the Crimson Tide or nothing as far as that first half position. But I'll probably be on the sideline on this one rooting for you.
Yeah, and keep in mind, they struggled against Duke, but they also had their top two running backs suspended or, you know, disciplined, I guess is the right word. They didn't play the first quarter. So it just wasn't true representation of Alabama. That's why they didn't cover the first half because they didn't play the first quarter. And a little rust to say this, you know, they had a couple turnovers with the backup quarterback. But this will be obviously a much stiffer competition for Bama on the road and obviously playing a better opponent. What's another game you have circled?
Another game I'm looking at is going to be a game a little bit off most people's radar, probably North Texas going to Berkeley to play Cal. You look at a Cal team, and they're off a huge 20-19 victory over Washington and Seattle, marking the second time that the Golden Bears have defeated Washington as a double-digit underdog in so many seasons. So they beat them last year. I think they were 11-point home dog last year in Berkeley when they upset Washington, a 13.5-point road dog last week when they defeated the Huskies in Seattle. You look at North Texas and their record-setting quarterback, Mason Fine. They fell at SMU 49-27 last week in a game that the Mustangs led 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. SMU led by no fewer than 11, I believe, from that point on. So SMU really controlled that game. Looking at Cal under their third-year head coach, Justin Wilcox, they've certainly played top 15 or at least top 20 caliber defense, in my opinion, for the most part. They've clearly been pedestrian on offense. You look at the Golden Bears, and dating back to the final two games of late 2017, their last 17 games, Cal's only averaged 21.6 points per game, struggled at the critical quarterback position. They've scored fewer points in each of the previous five seasons, the past five seasons, rather than the previous season. So that's a trend they want to stop. Looking at North Texas's defense, they just might be the tonic, I think, for an ailing offense such as Cal's. In the first two games this season for North Texas against Abilene Christian and SMU, North Texas allowed an average of a total of 90 points, 959 total yards offense, an average of 6.8 yards per play, almost 7 yards per play. The Mean Green has given up against Abilene Christian and SMU. Cal's going to be the toughest defense by far, in my opinion, that the Mean Green will face all season. I think the Golden Bears will be able to muster some points, take Cal, and lay the 14 there in Berkeley on Saturday.
That's a lot of points for an offense that's questionable, but obviously different opponent facing North Texas defense than Washington's stout D. And that was a wonky game with the huge weather delay. That ended after the Hawaii game ended. All things considered, it was just a bizarre night. So we talked earlier about the spot of a game. I think I'm going to jump on UNLV here. I think they were embarrassed last week, obviously did not look good against Arkansas State, but I think it's a good spot for the Rebels because I don't think Northwestern's very good. And we showed that against Stanford. Everyone knows the bad beat, and obviously that was one, but that was an awful game. Both backups were in. Northwestern never looked like a competent team, and we love Pat Fitzgerald as an underdog. But laying 18.5 against a team that's going to probably have a lot more speed, and I like the quarterback of the Rebels, I think the Rebels cover here 18.5, even on the road in Northwestern.
Yeah, I'm with you here, Doug. On a satellite radio program last week, I touted Arkansas State plus the small points over UNLV there at Sam Boyd Stadium. And some of the points I referenced supporting my position on that game, UNLV is not strong in certain point spread roles, and those roles are certain roles that teams that are below average, shall we say, don't typically thrive in, that being as a favorite when they're favored in a game, also when they're off a straight up victory as UNLV was, and also when a game is lined 3 points or fewer, whether that team is the favorite or the underdog, certain teams including UNLV do not perform well in those roles. look at the flip side, Northwestern, as you said, they've been a dynamic underdog the last 10 or 15 years. As a favorite, though, not so much. They're only 11-17 against the spread the last 10 years, I believe, as a double-digit favorite. They're a double-digit favorite here, giving this a shade under 20. Meanwhile, the Rebels, 6-2 against the spread the last couple of years as a double-digit dog. I think the point spread situation favors the Rebels tremendously here. I like your pick with UNLV.
Good deal. I like to hear that. Have that support. I need that. All right. I have one more play I'm going to run by you, but I want to get another play from you.
Yeah, looking at an interesting game, pitting the ACC against the Big 12. Going to look at this North Carolina State at West Virginia game on Saturday. West Virginia, you know, not thinking of all 130 teams, so I might be missing somebody, but I think they lost probably more key personnel, perhaps, than any other top-level team in all of college football. And especially so, I believe, on offense, where you've got the likes of quarterback Will Grier, you've got wide receivers like Gary Jennings and David Sills, who unfortunately for Mountaineer faithful no longer reside in Morgantown. It is shown certainly in the Mountaineers' first two games under first-year head coach Neil Brown. You look at their opener against an FCS power, but still an FCS team in James Madison. West Virginia actually outgained in that game. They won the game primarily because they were plus three in the turnover category. They escaped in Morgantown with a 20-13 victory over James Madison. And then last week in Columbia, just a total disaster, for lack of a better word, from West Virginia's perspective. Fell behind Missouri 31-0 at the half. Ultimately lost to the Tigers 38-7. So really a depressing performance there by West Virginia. You look at those games, how good they've been offensively the last couple of years, the last several years under Dana Holgorsen. In the games against James Madison and Missouri, the Mountaineers only averaged 3.7 yards per play. And just to establish a little bit of perspective, last year over the course of the entire 2018 season, West Virginia averaged 6.7 yards per play. So almost, you know, 3 yards exactly per play more, which is very, very significant. Under Neil Brown, you know, I think West Virginia may ultimately get things going again, you know, in the right direction. It's not going to be this year, though. North Carolina State, a very young football team. But I just think West Virginia's really got a long way to go. Even though they're at home, I think they're going to get beat by more than a touchdown. Take the Wolfpack, lay the 6.5 points.
I'm with you on that one. I'm really, really regretful that I did not play Missouri. It had all the makings of a blowout. The box score was not really indicative of how that game went in week one at Wyoming when they lost. I thought Kelly Bryant put up plenty of numbers. Even though I'm not a huge Kelly Bryant guy, this West Virginia team was just ripe for a whooping. And I don't have a lot of regrets in life, Paul, but that's one of them, not hammering the Tigers. I actually talked to a bookmaker, and I was like, I can't believe I didn't bet this Missouri one. He's like, me too. I feel so stupid. One game I also wanted to run by you is, you know, you talk about West Virginia, they're bad, but they're not among the worst in college football. Real quickly, if you had to name one team you think is the worst in college football, who would it be?
Well, you kind of helped me on this, but clearly the worst FBS team of all 130 FBS teams at this point is Massachusetts.
I agree.
Looking at the power ratings, I looked at Jeff Sagarin's power ratings this morning. He ranks all the teams, FCS teams included, and they're kind of co-mingled together. Currently, UMass ranks below the likes of Columbia, Holy Cross, Penn, and Duquesne, just to name a few. So this is really a bad football team right now, and clearly the worst of all 130 FBS teams might end up being a historically bad FBS team. They're really having struggles.
And that's where I was thinking, just given how they've been just getting smoked. So week one, I was on Rutgers. They blew them out. And I was on, I did not bet them, but they were laying 6 at home to Southern Illinois, lost by 25. So I'm on North Carolina, Charlotte, -19.5. They've kind of impressed me at first, all things considered, but I don't love laying this kind of lumber with a team not used to covering and winning by this much. But I just think it's an opportunity I can't pass up because I like what Charlotte's done, and UMass has just been, I mean, these numbers are going to get outrageous. And you know, you touched on it with ranking them below some Ivy League teams. You know, we talk about these FCS schools and, oh, you shouldn't play FCS. You shouldn't do this for your schedule. Well, a lot of these top-tier FCS schools are better than the bottom-tier, even Power 5, right? When Kansas was without Les Miles and some of these other teams, like North Dakota State's better than, you know, Rutgers was over the years and things like that. So When you get a school like UMass, you just have to seize the opportunity of just trying to make money off him because eventually the market's going to adjust. So I'm a little nervous, again, because Charlotte's not used to laying this kind of lumber, but I'll take the 49ers here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Charlotte, in their first two games, they've scored a lot of points.
Yep.
You know, they've put up the numbers. I heard a person last year, I believe, that I greatly respect, and I think it was you, Doug, and I might be wrong, which would be embarrassing, but I heard you on another program say that you would be hesitant maybe to lay hard-earned pre-tax dollars on a certain team. Does that sound like something you said?
Yeah, I even said it yesterday on the show. It's like, I'm not laying my taxed income and minus 110 on this team, right? So it's like, goes like the Dolphins-Patriots line. Like, I can't get involved in the Dolphins, even though it's an NFL game, you're catching 19. I'm going to need like 24 because you can't lay your taxed income on such bad teams.
Absolutely, and I kind of feel that way, and you alluded to it about Charlotte, but this team, this UMass team, I think, you know, probably if I'm hearing you right, this is more a play against UMass perhaps than a play on Charlotte. Maybe call it your cornbread Maxwell, nearly three touchdown favorite game of the week or something. But I'm with you. You know, I don't think it's going to be interesting to see from the bookmakers' side of the counter how much money they take on UMass and you know, how much the line moves, if indeed it does, in Charlotte's favor. But for me, again, like you, it'd have to be Charlotte or nothing. So that'll be an interesting game to watch.
All right, you got any more winners for us, or are you going to go out on that high-profile game between UMass and Charlotte?
Yeah, I gave you, you know, some of the games that I really am, you know, looking at closely there, just kind of looking over the sheet here real quickly before we go. I'll tell you again, I like Louisville to beat. They're playing Western Kentucky, you know, an in-state rival there. They're playing in Nashville on a neutral side. I really like what Scott Satterfield's done to change the psyche and the attitude of that team. And I think they've got some playmakers. Juwan Pass, Louisville's quarterback, still needs to throw the ball a little more effectively downfield. But they got some little guys that can go the distance. I think they beat Western Kentucky there by a couple of touchdowns. So that might be another one, you know, that I would toss in just for good measure.
Yeah, I liked Louisville in the opener against Notre Dame. I thought it was the prime spot. I'm going to look to bet Louisville a lot as a dog. I don't think I'm going to lay the 10 here, but I love the coach Satterfield from App State. And you got to do your best to throw out what you saw last year because they quit on Petrino, but that's not the team we have this year. And I think they're going to grow into, they're going to get better. They're going to get better moving forward as well. But I'll root you home. I'll root you home for that minus 10 there against Western Kentucky. My man, good to catch up. I'm glad we were able to do this. Really appreciate your accommodating our taping schedule, and enjoy the games this weekend, Paul.
Absolutely. Appreciate being on with you, Doug, and good luck to everybody out there.
Kicking is for losers.
Oh, and boy is it, especially in the NFL this weekend. You know, just when you think there's an analytics revolution, Vic Fangio likes to send us out on a good old-fashioned, archaic philosophy. Now, I know we're talking college here, but come on, man. What was going on there?
Yeah, and, you know, all kidding aside, I love the joke about kicking field goals and all and punting and everything, but if guys like Vic Fangio are going to be doing stuff like that, I think it's going to prevent other defensive-minded coaches from getting hired for head coaching jobs. These NFL teams are going to look more to these younger offensive-minded assistants that wouldn't kick a field goal down 21-6 with 10 minutes left in a game, man. I mean, what does going from a 15-point deficit to a 12-point deficit accomplish? Well, absolutely nothing. You still need two touchdowns.
Or they'll just hire a 10-year-old who plays a lot of Madden to help him figure it out.
Yeah,
that's all it takes.
Anyone could have figured that out. And then the Raiders ended up going right back down the field, kicked a field goal to keep the lead or push the lead back to 18.
15.
But now
15.
So 15, excuse me, you're right. But now there's like half as much time left on the clock. So just they accomplished absolutely nothing there. And we'll talk about the NFL tomorrow, I guess. But
right.
I did get a great laugh out of that. I'm not going
to
lie to you.
I'm sure you did. And I had my show meeting. Again, we're on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast. So some of the guys had gone to bed in the second half and things like that because they get up early. And I explained to them. They just looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, that could not have happened. I'm like, no, it
happened.
There's
no way that really happened. Well, we saw Vance Joseph kick a field goal down by four with a couple minutes left last year. So there's really like no limit to how bad.
That's not as bad because at least if you get the ball back, a field goal wins it. I don't know. I'm trying to
split
hairs. It's just stupid, but.
They were both extremely poor decisions, but I know what you're saying.
Right. I mean, even if I'm a okay, let's not get into it. Okay. College football. I'm trying to remember what you gave us last week. How were the sharp plays? That's a nice preparation.
It was a mixed bag last week. I don't recall exactly what we talked about on the show. I think we did talk about UCLA. UCLA was one that saw some sharp money on, but then there was some resistance towards the end.
That was my big
thing. Early in the week, we saw a lot of sharp guys taking the Bruins, and I talked to a few guys around town that liked the Bruins. Now, there was resistance to that play at the end. We saw some sharp groups come over the top on San Diego State. They were taking 9. They were taking 8.5 with the dog there. Chip Kelly, got to think he's going to be on his way out for UCLA. Just not getting it done.
We'll see. I did a segment earlier with Paul Stone talking about teams we're buying and selling. I'm definitely selling the Bruins, but, you know, it's a long season. It's still just mid-September. So maybe they'll turn.
We can. I was going to mention it later in the show. But we did see a guy, one of our sharper players, took 23 with the Bruins on Saturday. They host Oklahoma. I don't know if I can go down that road. To be honest with you, I don't think I can.
I can't.
I don't think I can play this one. I don't know that I want to step in front of Oklahoma, and I don't really know that I want to back UCLA for a third week in a row. But that doesn't change the fact that this is a respected player, and he took UCLA plus 23.
And I appreciate that, and thank you for sharing, and I agree with you. My thing is, and I've tried to evolve over the years, but I still have FOMO, like a lot of bettors out there. And look, am I going to, like, be annoyed if UCLA covers after I backed them the first 2 weeks? Sure, but I'm not going to, like, you know, you have to evaluate the decision at the time, and I want no part of UCLA, and I'm confident I want no part of UCLA, but that's interesting. What else you got?
Definitely in the early slate Saturday, we've definitely seen sharp money on Temple. We saw groups taking 7.5 with the Owls. We're down to 7. It makes sense. You have to think at this point Maryland is a little bit overvalued. And look, we saw sharp guys taking Syracuse last week. That obviously went up in flames. But I see where they're coming from with this bet on Temple this week. Maryland offense looks very prolific right now, but laying 7.5, this game's not really technically a road game. I believe they're playing at the Link on Saturday. Or is that considered Temple's home stadium? Well, it's one of those situations where it is a home game, but it's not really. I'm sure Maryland will have a lot of fans there because they're playing in an NFL stadium. But, the group took Temple plus 7.5. We're down to 7. And that's one play where I definitely see where the sharps are coming from there.
I believe on a quick Google search, they do play all their home games at the Link. I knew they played
all their
some.
Home games. That's like Georgetown. I'm a Georgetown basketball follower. My dad went to Georgetown, and they play their home games at the Wizards Arena instead of playing it on campus. So when they play bigger schools, it'll be like 50% fans of the other team when they play like a Connecticut or a Syracuse. I mean, I'm dating myself because they don't play those teams anymore in the conference schedule. But back in the day, there'd be tons of Syracuse and UConn fans there because they're not playing on an on-campus arena.
It's funny, we talked about Maryland. I'm buying Maryland. I like them. Not necessarily in this matchup, but I think they're for real. Now, for real meaning like middle of the pack of the Big Ten, but I like what they've done, and I'm backing the Terps just in general. I don't think it's fool's gold necessarily what they've done.
Well, you can't argue with what the results we're seeing out of the Terps. They've been incredibly impressive through 2 weeks, and we got crushed on that game Saturday morning, man. I mean, we had everybody on Maryland here, and we actually had one of our casino players came up right before kickoff, wanted another $20,000 on Maryland, and we gave that gentleman the bet, of course, and obviously that did not work out very well for us. It really put us behind the eight ball early Saturday morning. We got crushed on that game.
Well, I'm not going to shed too many tears for you.
No, you're not. You don't even feel bad for us that the late A&M touchdown, Jimbo Fisher calls timeout, sends in his goal line play to cover the point spread.
I'm okay with that. That was really bad for us. There was rationale there, like trying to get on the board, build some momentum for the next week. I think he's taking care of his boosters, DK.
I mean, call me a cynic, but I think he knew what the point spread was. He's got to keep those boosters happy.
Yeah, I've always said that's a huge part of college football. What I don't agree with is Dabo not milking the clock on the drive and not aware of the point spread. Let's just put it that way. Is that fair?
I think that's very fair. You want to move down the list a little bit here. Here's another one that I think would be tough to play. You've really got to... You're taking your life into your own hands here, but we saw money come in on the UNLV running Rebels. They took 20.5. Now we're down to 18.5. They're on the road against Northwestern. We're down to 18. So this number's moved 2.5 points. UNLV definitely seen some sharp money here at the Westgate.
I'm on them. Northwestern not good as a favorite. I talked about it earlier here on the podcast with Paul. Like I want no part of the Wildcats there. Not that I'm always aching to bet UNLV, but I think it's a good spot for the Rebs. But now,
yeah, you don't want to be aching to bet UNLV at any point in your. There's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot to choose from on a college football Saturday. But fact of the matter is that we've seen sharp money come in on the Rebels, and we've seen that number dip down a little bit so far.
Good deal. What else you got, buddy?
Iowa on the road in Ames. They're taking on Iowa State. I believe College Game Day will be in Ames this weekend. Seeing that number drift up from Pick'em to right now Iowa's a 2-point favorite on the road in that spot. One of the bigger games really in recent memory for both of these schools. I guess Iowa had a Big Ten championship game a couple years ago, but certainly the biggest Iowa State football game that I can remember.
Well, Iowa State had, what, they beat Oklahoma 1 year? Like 2 years ago?
Yeah, they did. I think they also beat Oklahoma State 1 year when Oklahoma State was ranked really high. But I mean it more in the sense of like pregame. This is really got to be one of the bigger games in school recent school history for
the
Cyclones.
Old Cy-Hawk Trophy.
Yeah, that's a good. That's one of my favorite trophies too. Not as good as the Paul Bunyan axe.
Well, then again, what is?
But of course. How about this one? Probably the biggest line move we've seen, at least here at our book, Georgia State. These guys were taking 11.5, 11, 10. We're all the way down to 8.5 on Georgia State. They're on the road against Western Michigan. I'm not going to pretend I have an opinion on this game because I don't, but certainly the sharp money has come in on the dog there, and you've seen a pretty big point spread move in that game.
Yeah, no opinion there.
Yeah. How about this one? Maybe this was a fun one. Hawaii group yesterday took 21. We've actually gone back to 21 since that bet, but they took plus 21. They're on the road at Washington. Washington, I'll bring us around to the opening segment. We talked about how kicking field goals is for losers. Washington lost 20-19 to Cal on Saturday night. They kicked 4 field goals in that game. Lost by 1 point.
And they're all inside the 10, too. They were, no, I'm serious. Most of them were.
Yeah, that's not good. So that was definitely I actually had a play on Cal. I don't know if we mentioned it on this show last week, but there was some support for Cal early in the week. They took 14.5. That was nice. I'm not going to pretend I stayed up for that game, man. That game was way too late, but yeah. It was good to see Cal get the victory there.
The sharp money's on what?
Hawaii. They took 21 in that game. Now, we've gone back up to 21, but the group took they went plus 21 yesterday.
You know Hawaii's failed to cover as a favorite in 18 straight games?
Really? I know that them not covering on Saturday was a great result for us. Saturday was a weird day because we did really poorly in the morning, and then in the afternoon, everybody was on Texas A&M. We took a big loss on that game, but we seemed to win almost every night game. I know the BYU-Tennessee game was a huge winner for us, and we did well in that Hawaii game against Oregon State. Some of the night games really went our way, although LSU-Texas, that was not the perfect result for us. That was a tough beat if you had 6.5 or more with Texas, I thought.
Yeah, that was. I mean, all things considered.
They had the first and fourth and goal play early in the game where the kid dropped the pass. It should have been an easy touchdown. Then they get the ball back inside the 5, first and goal again. They again get stopped on fourth and goal. And then the Joe Burrow touchdown pass to cover the point spread on 3rd and 17. It's a tough L for the Longhorns there.
Yeah, I just thought that was the right side, like, all week. I just really like LSU.
They are loaded. I don't know. I think that number did get a little bit high. Texas is pretty solid, too, but there's no question. LSU is completely loaded this year.
Don't disagree. What else you got?
I don't know if you want to talk about, I guess it's the premier game of the week is this Clemson-Syracuse game. We opened 27.5. We're up to 28 right now. Syracuse just off of a terrible loss to Maryland, and Clemson just keeps humming along. I mean, this was a game that in the preseason people had pointed to as a potentially one of the roadblocks for Clemson this year.
You never, and these big number one teams never get tripped up by the same team back to back years.
Yeah, now, well, two years ago they lost at the Carrier Dome.
I thought it was last year they almost lost.
I think they almost lost last year too, but 2 years ago they did lose. On the road, of course. Now, that was Clemson was a different team before they had Trevor Lawrence under center. But, I know Syracuse has given them trouble the last couple seasons. No Eric Dungy this year, though.
Exactly. So what sharp action on that game? I'm sorry?
Nothing. I just thought we should talk about how that game, the point spread's so high. I'll give you one last one. I did see some sharp money earlier in the week. my alma mater, West Virginia. They took 7 with the Mountaineers at home. They're against NC State. We're down to 6.5 on this game. That was an ugly loss on Saturday for the Mountaineers. It's certainly a rebuilding year in Morgantown, and they haven't really done themselves any favors with their out-of-conference schedule. They played an underrated James Madison team that maybe people don't realize how good they are. Then they went at Missouri. Now they're at home to face the Wolfpack on Saturday morning. And then after that, they've got 9 Big 12 games because they play a 9-game conference schedule. So really a tough year for the Mountaineers.
Yeah, I don't think – I can't get behind that.
All right. I'm just letting you know. I was happy to see some sharp money on my school. That was all. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you should play for the draft pick, Murray.
You're not into it, huh? Okay, that's fair.
You should
fair.
Play for the draft pick this year.
Like the Miami Dolphins?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I had heard grumblings of West Virginia plus 7. I'm not behind that one. Although it'd be an ugly dog. It'd be fun cover there.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, the only other thing I can really tell you, I mean, obviously we're a little early in the week. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. Seen some big money come in on Boston College. They're a 3-touchdown favorite on Friday night against the Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas coming off of a bad loss on Saturday at home to Coastal Carolina. And then this morning we took some big money on Colorado. Colorado's like everybody's darling right now. The great comeback win on Saturday. I thought Nebraska completely choked that game away, The fact of the matter is that Colorado won the game. And then the previous week, they had blown out Colorado State in a big rivalry game there. So Colorado right there with Maryland for early season surprises in college football.
Could be some fool's gold there with the Buffs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it looks like kind of a trap on Colorado, only laying 4 right now at home against Air Force. So I would be careful with that one, sir.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. All right, well, Bud, is that all you got for me?
Yeah, you know, it's not a great weekend of college football, I would argue. Not a great slate. But I think when you have a weekend like this without too many marquee matchups, you'll get rewarded for it later in the year. There's got to be a few Saturdays coming in October and November where we just have wall-to-wall great matchups. So.
And there's always opportunities to make some money.
Oh, there's definitely opportunities to make some money. I just mean we don't have an LSU-Texas game. We don't have an A&M-Clemson game. We don't have the marquee matchups this week. But certainly there will be a lot of places for us to dump our money, no question.
What about the Heisman Trophy? You've had some movement, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly – let me pull that up right now because I think it's pretty interesting what's going on there. You know, you had Jalen Hurts 2 weeks ago, had the huge game against Houston, and then obviously Joe Burrow – this past Saturday with a huge game against Texas, 2 really high-profile games. So right now you've got all these quarterbacks kind of in a similar range. You've got Tua Tagovailoa at 3-1, Lawrence 5-1, Jalen Hurts is 9-2, and I can't even find Burrow because he wasn't a guy that we had listed too high. We've got him at 5-1 right now. I was trying to find the bets on him. One guy got 40-1. Before the game Saturday, and we've got 11 people that are holding 200-1 tickets on Joe Burrow, including one gentleman that made his bet in July that's got $150 at that number. So certainly we do have some – what's that?
What were those odds?
200-1.
Wow. I think he's got a really good chance because I think if LSU runs the table and even loses at Alabama, I think they can still get in the playoff.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see. That'll be very interesting to see how many teams from the SEC can get into the playoff for sure.
And Trevor Lawrence, they're going to be favored by over 20 the rest of the year. He may not play the second half in a lot of games. Tua, there could be some voter fatigue. Now, Tua's going to have some bigger games like the Iron Bowl. But, I mean, Burrow's big.
Well, I don't know that there will be voter fatigue with Tua because I feel like, if anything, the voters kind of robbed Tua last year. They didn't give him the Heisman Trophy because the team.
In general, I think there's like over, like, we. Like the preseason favorite has won like once in the last 15 years. It's been like Mariota was the only, like, I don't know if he was necessarily the favorite, but you know, the top two guys or whatever. Even Andrew Luck, RG3 won, like lost like 3 games or something, and Luck didn't win. And Baylor won a game without RG3 when he's hurt for a game. So I think there's just people like the buzz, and maybe Burrow's peaking too early. Who knows? Or maybe it's like Lamar Jackson when he came out of the gates, beat FSU like week 2 or whatever it was, and then became the favorite and then won it going away. But that's because no one else kind of established themselves. So anyways, that's just my little handicapping of the voting, the voters.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, though. We've got four quarterbacks, with odds of 5-1 or lower. And then Justin Fields hanging just outside that group. We got him at 8-1. So a lot of high profile quarterbacks this year. And we talked, I think, in the summer. It's hard to believe a non quarterback could ever win the Heisman Trophy again with the kind of offensive numbers we're seeing being put up these days. And right now we're in really good shape on Tua, not so good shape on Joe Burrow. Long way to go, though.
Long way to go. Murray, always good catching up, my man. And looking forward to tomorrow where we can break down the NFL card. Got a little worried there, bankroll bonanza. It was
yeah. The Titans came through for me. I was really disappointed with Carolina. I mean, the Titans it's NFL. I mean, anything can happen, but I was happy to see the Titans come through.
I was on the Browns as my favorite play. So
I look forward to making fun of Vic Fangio, and I look forward to joking about the tie. You know, I love ties. We had a tie, Arizona Detroit. So I'm excited to discuss those things.
All right, bud. Sounds good. Talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to them all.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
The Bob Lee voice is just so perfect for this. Do you like it, Travis?
Anytime we can get Bob Lee in the show, I'm all for it.
I mean, the beacon of journalism, right? Like this credible, authoritative guy who's been on the front lines of all of our serious, hard news coverage doing gambling references.
The more gambling Bob Lee, wonder how many games he's actually ever gambled on. I bet he makes a nice side wager with some friends or stuff like that.
No, that's the thing I've said is Paul, Bob Lee is like a very cool dude. I mean, he's done a lot of things. He's done everything in the broadcasting world. He's not just doing hard news.
I bet he is the, hey, Doug, $100, he gets a first down here kind of guy when he's like at a buddy's basement watching
games. Yeah, I can see that. That's a good call. But, I just think it's so perfect to have Bob Lee's voice do all this movie references. All right, my man. So you learned a lot, I can imagine.
I'm taking all this information and going to the nearest bookie and placing bets.
Go find them. Thanks to everyone for downloading. Welcome aboard, Travis. Good to have you. I know we've worked a lot in the past as well, and that's what I probably should have said at the beginning of the podcast. I've known you for a while, even though this is your first time here on the podcast. We've worked together in radio. And you used to work with College Game Day Radio, and you still are, actually,
I got two more shows, and then I'm telling them goodbye. I'm saying, listen, I'm done with you guys. I'm with Doug
No
now.
More Doug. I came to this gig with Doug, for Doug. And no, you and I, you took over the year Matt Schick started hosting, yes. So I never worked with you on that.